My paid membership group brings in roughly $1 million a year. It has for the last 5 years. That's the article that Forbes wrote about me years ago.
Jennifer Allwood is a business coach and host of The Jennifer Allwood Show. She built a multi-7-figure-a-year coaching business in the online space after transitioning from a lucrative painting company that she started herself after a career in, get this, IT. Information technology. Today, Jennifer is able to use her social media following of 600,000 people across multiple platforms, her podcast with over 5 million downloads, her coaching groups with thousands of members, and her number one best-selling book, Fear is Not the Boss of You, to help other women do for their businesses what she has done in hers. And on this episode, we dive deep into Jennifer's true life story. Where did she come from? How did she achieve the level of success she has now? And how did she leverage the success from her first business into a multi-million dollar online empire, even while starting a family?
If I could just show myself that I can, you know, make some money, I'm going to say no to this initial job offer after I got laid off. But then I was like, okay, but I got to hustle. Well, then I got pregnant, like 10 minutes into my painting company business doing well.
In this interview, I asked Jennifer how she really pulled it all off. And she gives us the piece of advice that we all need to hear at this stage where we are right now. And trust me, you'll want to hear it from her. Now, we had to cut the interview down for the podcast, but I kept the full interview inside our uncut vault, available only to our TGP insiders. In the full version, Jennifer shares the details of her upbringing, which she rarely shares on interviews. She also shares more about the troubles her marriage went through in the beginning of her business and how to incorporate your faith and your beliefs in your message without fear of alienating your audience members. These are details that we don't want you to miss, so we put them all inside our uncut vault. Become a TGP insider today and get the full story at theglobalphenomenon.com/insider. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts while you're out for a walk, please take a moment to screenshot this episode and tag me so that I can say a proper thank you. I appreciate you so much for sharing about the show. And please head over to the review section and leave us a 5-star review and say something nice. It really helps support the show. And thanks. Here's our interview with the millionaire who's full of faith, Jennifer Allwood. Welcome to The Global Phenomenon, the podcast about online coaching, the inspiring new career that has taken the world by storm, creating multiple self-made millionaires and opening the doors for regular folks like you and me to achieve our wildest dreams. Hi, my name is Ina Coveney, six-figure entrepreneur and business coach for online coaches, ready to live a rich, passionate, and abundant life without regrets. And I'm on a mission to uncover the secret sauce that made the top coaches in our industry rise to global phenomenon status so that you can be next. Today's episode begins now. All right, we have Jennifer Allwood right here with us. Jennifer, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited. This is going to be fun. Thank you.
This is going to be so cool. But before we get started, because I like to start way back in the beginning. Yep. Before we start, can you please tell everybody, what do you do and who do you serve right now?
Excellent. Right now, I serve mostly women. We're about 99% women in terms of the people that come into my coaching group. So I'm a coach for women who are either starting or trying to scale their small businesses in the online space. So I serve women who are launching courses, who are launching membership groups, masterminds, one-on-one consulting. So I help them figure out how to use social media, email, and other tools in order to do that. So that's who I'm serving.
And what's crazy is that this is not what you did in your career for the better part of your career. That's not been where you've been. So yeah. We are going to get there. But first, sure. I like to start from the beginning. Can you tell everybody, where were you born? What was your childhood like? Take us way back.
All right. Well, way back. So I am from a tiny, tiny town called Mobile, Iowa. It was 1,200 people when I left to go to college. So it's outside of Sioux City, Iowa. It's a farm community. In terms of my childhood, let's see. Well, I was not raised to be an entrepreneur. I know that. I have never met my biological father. I can tell you that. So was raised in a home that a lot of the times was very volatile. And was not a real safe place and was not real calm. So I couldn't wait to get out of the house. I was the oldest. I had two half brothers and four stepbrothers. So I ended up, I graduated from high school when I was 17, not because I was brilliant, but because I was the youngest in my class, and left for college, went on an academic scholarship, and was just really glad to just be away from the volatileness of the house, if that makes sense. And then when I was 19 years old, moved from that small town in Iowa to Kansas City, Missouri, where I currently live with my husband and children.
You have made faith a big part of your message, a big part of your business. Yeah. And it's part of my notes is I'm very curious, where did that passion for your faith come from?
Yeah. So, so when I was a child growing up, my parents they were not people of faith, but they insisted that we get baptized in the Catholic Church and that we go to Wednesday night CCD classes, which is super funny, you know, because, I don't think that I learned a lot at CCD classes, but I did learn how to play Truth or Dare. I did learn how to play Spin the Bottle.
Interesting.
A whole lot, not about God, but just about life in general. And so that was kind of my upbringing. We did not go to church as a family. I can remember maybe seeing my parents in church twice in my life as a child. But when I was 16, my best friend invited me to go to her church, which was a non-denominational church in the city, in Sioux City. And I was like, sure, I'll go with you. Not because I wanted to go to church, because I just wanted to hang out with my best friend. And that particular day, we went in the evening to youth group. So it was going to be fun. They did an altar call for anybody who did not know Jesus as their Lord and Savior, anybody that wanted to give their life to Christ. And I'll never forget my best friend, Rachel. She looked at me and she said, "Do you want to go up front? I'll go with you." And I'll never forget that "I'll go with you," because that was so powerful for me. And I think that's one of the reasons I love what I do in coaching, because I get to go with so many women and come right alongside of them and link arms and be like, you know, this is scary, but we've got this together. So I went up front with her, gave my life to Christ. The next time I went to church, which was, I can't remember if it was the next day or the next week, I ended up getting filled with the Holy Spirit. And my life has never been the same. What was interesting is my parents were very uncomfortable with this new like love of church. And there was a lot of really cool kids that went to like youth group and things. So I would want to go to church with my best friend on Sunday morning. And then they had youth on Sunday night. And then they would have youth on Wednesday night. And my parents were like, "What is happening at this church that you want to spend so much time there?" They were very uncomfortable with that. And it was very different than my Catholic upbringing. Right. And so I had to start lying, you know, to my parents. And I would ask them if I could go to the dance club on Sunday nights, because there was a teen dance club in the city. And so they would let you go. I think you had to be 16 at a minimum. And so my parents would say yes to the dance club, and then I would sneak to church. So true story, as long as they thought I was going to be out, you know, dancing and smoking and drinking, they were okay. But I actually lied and would go to church with my best friend.
We're going to come back to faith, because sure, once we get started into talking about business, I know there's a lot of people who you know, who wonder about, yeah, how do you inject that into your business? We will get there.
I would love it.
But first, I did want to zoom into a very, very unusual part of your story, which is you actually studied computer technology in college. My mother was the first computer engineer to graduate from her university in 1977. Okay. So I come from a computer family. I got a computer science degree. This is something we don't see a lot of women, and I was the only one in like the one of five in a class of 90 dudes in college.
Yes.
And I am really wondering, where did that lean towards computer came from? How did you come up with going to college for it?
Okay. So I went to college, you know, for that 1 year right out of high school, and I went on an academic scholarship. And when I got to college, I, you know, was living up life so much that I ruined my scholarship. So I couldn't reapply for it the second year. So I dropped out. And it was when I dropped out that then I moved to Kansas City. And was not in college for many, many years. When I met my now husband, I was 25-ish, and we've been married now for 26 years almost. But so I was 24, 25 when I met him, and I had been pondering about finishing my degree. It was bugging me that it's something that felt like unfinished. And I have a book called Fear is Not the Boss of You, where I kind of tell the story about how, because of the household that I was raised in, I always was a little more responsible than what a normal person my age should be. And so that was not only in childhood, but then also as an adult. So for instance, I bought my first home when I was 21 as a single woman, because I thought that it was irresponsible to pay rent. So I had, you know, worked two jobs so I could save up enough money that I could purchase my own home. So at 21, I was in Kansas City with a mortgage when most of my friends were either still in college or they were, you know, still going out in the evenings or what have you. So it was a lot of responsibility from a young age. And so then, because 21 is still, you know, it's still really young. I have a 22-year-old, our son's 22, and I'm like, I can't imagine him with a mortgage. But about 25, I started thinking, I wish that I had finished my degree. And I'm actually just a lover of learning. And so I missed that, like that challenging myself and being in a place where I learned new things. So I decided to go back to college and finish the degree that I had started right out of high school. Went through, you know, the year or two of evening classes where I had to finish up just my prerequisites, and then had a meeting with my advisor, and I had to select, you know, what my degree was going to be in. And I'll never forget that day, because I was sitting in her office and she was like, okay, Jennifer, you know, what is it that you want to do for a living? And she didn't know me. And all she had was, you know, my chart in front of her of what classes I had taken. And the conversation was really simple. I said, well, I either want to do like computers or I want to do interior design. And those are two totally different things. And I said, I truthfully just don't think that I can make any money at interior design. You know, I had, like I said, bought my first house at 21 and I had figured out how to make it really stinking cute, but on a budget. Like I would go to Goodwill and the thrift stores and I would spray paint things. And I had figured out I really had a knack for decorating, but I told her, I just don't think I can make any money. And she's like, okay. And I said, so I guess computers it is. And she's like, okay. And that was that. And so the answer is really, it just boiled down to, where did I think that I could make income? And I always knew that I loved nice things. I always knew, and I'd been raised in a household where we had nice things. I always knew that I wanted to make a lot of money. I always knew that I also wanted to make a lot of impact and that money would help me to do that. So it wasn't like coming from this place of incredible greed, but I knew that money gives you options and money is just a tool. And so many people are afraid to make it and they're afraid to talk about it because they associate greed, with income. And I always innately knew that that was not the case. So I ended up selecting computer-based information systems as a degree simply because I thought I could make a lot of money at it. And so I graduated top of my class when I was 30 and hate computers to this day. And there you have it.
Okay. We are going to pause right here because before you even graduated college, you took this 2-day faux finishing workshop.
Yes.
That got you into the path of having your side hustle you know, hiring your sister-in-law eventually and all of that. And I just wanted to just pause because we're going to be talking a lot about faux finishing for the next
And people are like, what the heck is faux finishing? I'll tell them what that is. That's great.
Please tell us what is faux finishing and tell us about that 2-day workshop and why did that open your mind so much?
Well, when I was in my late 20s is when HGTV was really starting to become a thing. And so then, you know, when it was after that Pinterest came about, but people were really starting to watch television shows and things where decorating was a thing. And I would watch HGTV all the time. And my husband and I, like I said, I had bought my first house when I was 21, the middle 20s, we got married and I was always needing a project. I was always wanting to paint something around the house or, you know, redo the backyard or build a brick wall or what have you. And so we would go to the home show every year. Have you ever heard of a home show? It's usually in just the biggest cities in the United States. And it's in like a downtown auditorium and different people rent out booths. So there would be vendors that are like painters and vendors that are cabinet people and shutter people and deck people. So you can go walk around, just get ideas for your home. And so my husband and I were walking through the home show, and I think I was 29 at the time. And we stumbled upon this booth, and these people had all these painted cabinet doors, and they had like painted furniture in their booth. And they had like these big pieces of poster board that they had painted to look like marble, and your walls could look like that. And they look like stone, and your walls could look like that. And they had painted pieces of wood to look like, you know, something that they weren't. And I was fascinated. And I can just remember, it was such eye candy for me that I had like a physical almost reaction to it. Like my heart was beating fast and I felt all giddy. It was like a kid in a candy store. This is what they teach people how to do for a living. And I didn't even know that that was a thing. They were selling like weekend workshops a mile or an hour or so outside of Kansas City. And so I talked to my husband. I was like, I really want to go to like a weekend workshop. I want to figure out how we can redo some of the walls in our house. And he was like, honey, go have fun. And so I said, I think I'm going to ask your sister if she wants to go, because she loves home and decor just as much as I do. So we went together for a weekend workshop, and huge, you know, huge change in everything that happened after that.
I feel like I have a big gap in your story between age 21 and age 30. Like, what was happening in your
20s? Well, I was in college, because I went back to college when I was in my middle 20s. I met my husband in my middle 20s, and we were, you know, and we'll say we dated for a year. We got engaged. We're engaged for 8 months and got married. And then we had been married for a year when we realized, wow, we are a mess. He came from a broken home, as did I. My parents got divorced when I was, after I had left home. And so we got married, even though my husband at the time was not a believer. And this is where my faith kind of pops back up, because even though I knew what the Bible says about being unequally yoked, I also knew that I was madly in love with him. And I was like, Lord, I'm just praying that this thing works out. Like, I hope that this is going to be okay. So I can remember walking down the aisle. I was 26 when we got married, and just thinking, Lord, please let it work out. Lord, please let it work out. And it was okay for a year. And then about a year into our marriage, we came to a point where we were like, okay, do we actually like stay married, or do we just go ahead and get a divorce? We've been married for a year. And a lot of people around us just gave us the advice that go ahead and just throw in the towel. You don't have kids. You could just end it now, is what a lot of people told us. But the truth was, I was madly in love with him, and he was madly in love with me. And both of us were willing to work on it. And so I said, because my faith had been at one point so important to me, I'm willing to work on this if you are, but we have to go to therapy and we have to go to church. And he was like, all right, I'm in.
So in the year 2000, you're mm-hmm. working at a major tech company. You're doing software yep. development. Yeah. You're making good money. You have
making
benefits.
Great money. Yeah.
Everything is fine. Yeah. You get laid off.
Yeah, everything was fine, but I hated it.
Right?
Everything is fine, except I felt like I was in prison every day.
Yeah, yeah. So many people relate to that yes. feeling. So many yeah. people dread feeling like they're about to get laid off and they're going to lose everything, even though yep. they know that they don't like it. And I would love to inject a little bit of your wisdom and perspective in here for everybody sure. right now who is in that position. What do you tell them?
Yeah. So when I was, you know, in my late 20s, and I had found those people that had the painting school, and I went to the painting school and I learned how to do some things, and I did them in my own house, and people were starting to ask me, hey, would you do that thing that you did on those walls, like in my house? And I was like, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I've never really thought about doing it for somebody else. You know, what do I charge? What do I not charge? And so I kind of did that on a couple things. And then I had a lady at my telecom company, that job, that she said, you know, you should really do this like as your side hustle. Like, you should get some business cards made and actually make it into a business. And I was like, I don't even know where to start with that. It felt daunting. That felt big and intimidating. But I thought, okay, well, if I'm going to get business cards, like, I probably have to actually like figure out a business name first. I didn't even know the very basics. And so for about 6 months, I tried to figure out a business name. I finally came up with the name, The Magic Brush. I didn't like it, but I knew after 6 months that this is like holding me up from getting business cards, which is holding me up from getting a little extra spending money on nights and weekends. So like, I have to just decide which name I hate the least and go with that. So I did that, and found a couple decorators and designers in Kansas City who wanted to give me a chance in some houses. And I was like, well, this is kind of fun. And then I got laid off, and I thought, well, I'll just find a different job. I'll just find a better job. And I thought, but in the meantime, I wonder what would happen. Could I get a couple of painting jobs that would just kind of tie us over? And I did have a severance and things from that company, but I thought it'd be nice to just have a couple more painting opportunities just to, you know, give us some extra spending money. I got a job offer from a company in Kansas City that most people would have taken. And I knew Jason and I were wanting to start a family. And I told him, I feel like I'm supposed to say no. And thank you, Jesus, just for a husband who's so supportive. Cause he was like, well, then say no. And the Lord just blew up my painting business. It was amazing. I got in with a couple of really incredible designers right off the bat. We ended up working in a model home here in Kansas City that was featured all over the news, in the newspapers, my picture, you know, the company's name. And that was the start in the year 2000 of a 17-year painting career. So it was very cool.
Yeah. And one thing that I found really, really impressive, and I love to hear your behind the scenes of this. This wasn't just a little painting business. You were being featured on TV. You were on the news channel on the regular. You went on Extreme Makeover.
Yeah, Extreme Home Makeover. Edition. Yeah.
Extreme Three Home times. Makeover.
Three okay. times.
I want to know like that. I want to know like how, because I'm going to paint the picture here. Everybody who's listening right now, there's only so much that they can dream. Right now they can dream beyond a certain point.
Yeah.
And you not only dreamt there, you went there. So how did you break through that initial like threshold of just, this is pocket money. Okay. This is just my livelihood. No, I'm going to be on Extreme Home Makeover. Right.
Well, it went from pocket money to, okay, if I could just show myself that I can, you know, make some money, I'm going to say no to this initial job offer after I got laid off. But then I was like, okay, but I got to hustle because otherwise we had positioned our life. So we needed a second income. Well, then I got pregnant like 10 minutes into my painting company business doing well. And I can remember thinking, okay, well, we were going to start a family. This is just a little bit sooner than what I was expecting. And I continued to paint up until I was about 8 months pregnant. And I had a little stumble off of a ladder one day when I was 8 months pregnant. I was painting in somebody's two-story bathroom. I was on an extension ladder and I missed the last step coming down. And I was 8 months pregnant with my son, Noah. And I told my husband, okay, I can't do this anymore. Like some girls are, you know, they're just like a tiny little pregnant belly. That was not me. Like I was the size of a small car. Like I was a Volkswagen. And so I called my sister-in-law, the one that I had went to that painting weekend with years before. And I said, would you want to come to work for me? And you could paint while I stay home and, you know, have this baby and then we'll see what happens. And she was like, absolutely. So I hired her. And then shortly thereafter, because our boys are 22 months apart, I was pregnant again. So she continued to paint while I stayed home and continued to manage it. And that worked. That was really cool. And then there was some projects we got that, you know, had, we needed to hire in some other women and that was awesome. And then we heard Extreme Home Makeover was coming to Kansas City and you could go, I can't remember where it was at. I feel like it was actually in a church, either in a church or a school, and you could go and just kind of show them some of your samples and apply. And I was just naive and, you know, just, it wasn't that I was seeing stardom. I was just like, this would be a great opportunity. Like, how cool would this be? And so I took my samples in and we just had incredible favor with ABC and with the Extreme Home Makeover people. So we got to do 3 episodes with them. And, I had a client fly me to Belize to look at a project. We worked for a couple of Chiefs players in Kansas City. It was just, it was really, really a cool gig. What I learned though, is that I didn't paint very much after that first year. What my talent was actually the marketing of the business and the getting us more business. So I had the painting company for 17 years. At the end, I had 8 women painting for me every day. So that's why
I did want to ask you about this because
yeah,
there are people who are listening who will tell you, but wait, Ina, I can't just pick one thing to do, or I hate the business side, or I'm multi-passionate. I like to, you know, in your shoes, I love to paint and I really want to just do that. So I don't really want to manage it, right? And I hear your story and I see your story. And I was listening to one of your latest podcast episodes where you're like, I'm always doing projects, right? Like
always.
Renovated a home and your daughter's room needed to be needed new walls. So now it needs new everything.
Yep.
And this is something that is still very much in your blood. What do you tell new creatives who want to turn this into a business and are having a hard time breaking through the scaling part of it?
Right. Well, I think that you either need to surround yourself with people who think differently than you. So in my case, I feel like God really gave me a kind of a half and half brain. You know, most people either lean very creative or very analytical, and I'm half and half enough that I was able to do the business side of things in addition to. A lot of my very first clients when I started coaching are, and still I have a ton of creatives. And so I recognize myself in them and them in me, of course. And they don't like the business side. But also, I think that I have to remind them, like, but do you also like being broke? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of them are broke, and it's broke almost by choice, because people will pay for your skill. You're just not brave enough to put a price tag on it, or brave enough to set up some things in a professional enough way that people will honor the skill that you have. If you're wanting to make an income at your skill, at your craft, the talent that God gave you, you're also going to have to do some of the marketing of it and some of the business side of it. And if you're not good at it, find somebody that is so that you can grow.
Yeah. And you've been in this, you know, in the online marketing field for a while. Mm-hmm. I would love to know, with your perspective, what are some things that maybe they used to work to grow an audience before, but are not working now? What would work now to grow an audience?
Well, right now, I think that content is still king. So it has to be good content. It also, it can't be vanilla. Like, let me give you some examples. There was a day when we used to be able just to put, you know, a graphic up of "Happy Thursday, what are you doing today?" and have hundreds of people respond. And, you know, I have 360,000 Facebook followers at this point. Those days are long gone. Those days are long, long gone. And so, but what people will engage with is when I put a post out that has to do with business, but there's a human component to it. There's part of my story, or a picture of the family, or how business has allowed us, you know, to buy our first and second VRBOs. And, you know, when I'll do that and pull in that human aspect, those sorts of things are working, because your social media presence is actually so important psychologically when people are looking at your business. They want to know they're doing business with someone that is legit. And the one of the ways that you look legit is you have social proof, you know, in terms of being on social media. So if you're not good at it, find somebody that can help you to get good at it.
I love that. I just have like two more questions.
Sure, and yeah.
They're good ones, and I can't wait to hear your answer to them. The first one is, seven figures. At this point, you're a multi seven figure entrepreneur. Yeah. And we have people who are listening who can't even imagine having a four figure a month. I'd love it if you could kind of shed a little bit of light to them on, if you have a coaching business, where is the quote unquote, the big money? What are the things that they should be focusing on to make sure that the revenue really shoots up?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you. So I started online, like with my first coaching classes and things, 10 years ago, and it took me 14 months to make $100,000. So 14 months to make 100,000. Part of that though, is because I had a social media following. So you've got to have a social media following, because if you don't have anybody to sell stuff to, it doesn't matter how good your product is, your service in the town that you live in, your coaching program is, like, you have to have people to sell it to. So one, you have to have social media, and two, you have to have your own email list, because it's the only thing that you actually own. You know, we're just renting space from Mark Zuckerberg on social media. So you have to have an email list with it. If you're looking for the big bucks, and if you are, so the three areas I like to focus in, let me just say this first. To help women with are to coach, like with a course. So you can, I have a course where I teach people how to be a coach, how to be a consultant, how to, you know, do that. So that's my course. It's an 8-week long. You can do one-on-one consulting, or you can start like a paid membership group. My paid membership group brings in roughly $1 million a year. It has for the last 5 years. That's the article that Forbes wrote about me years ago that you can go Google and find. And so a lot of people are like, "Ooh, I saw her on Forbes. I know she makes $1 million a year on that. So that's what I want to do." But I actually don't suggest that in the beginning. I actually suggest you either start with a course or with one-on-one consulting. And it's kind of dependent upon whether or not you have an audience or not. If you don't have much of an audience, do one-on-one consulting. You can charge more for that. Every single person listening to me right now has a skill, a talent, a story, an experience that God has allowed them to walk through that could be a blessing to somebody else, or somebody else would pay for. So that's one-on-one consulting. If you have some sort of an audience established, do a course, because a course is going to be an influx of cash keep it tight. We have a really short attention span in America right now, you know, so keep it 4 to 8 weeks maximum. But you kind of can get in, get out. It's really great for those people who have creative minds, because like a membership, which is, you know, a lot of times people come to me to learn how to do that, but it requires I show up every single week, and I have for almost 8 years in my membership group. And a lot of people just don't want that sort of commitment. So do a course, either do a course if you have a social media following, or do one-on-one consulting if you don't.
Love it. And yeah, my second big one, I can't let you go without talking a little bit about faith.
Yeah.
We have listeners
who
are deeply spiritual, but are actively afraid of showing that online. They think, I have way too much to lose because I haven't had any clients yet. So if I start, you know, talking about my spirituality, maybe I'll be neglecting or like pushing away half of the people who could be buying from me.
Absolutely.
So they're thinking to themselves, well, maybe once I make it big enough, once I'm making enough money, then I'll feel more comfortable.
That's like saying that you're going to start tithing after you make more. Like if you don't start giving to your church when you make a little, you're never going to give to your church when you make a lot.
Because I would love your perspective.
Yeah. So it, okay. So here's what happened. I have always been a woman of faith. You know, I came back to the Lord at 30. Like I told you, my husband and I are very involved in our church. We've raised all 4 of our children in church. And it was probably 7 or 8 years ago. I was on a coaching call. You know, I've got hundreds of women that are on a call with me. Somebody raised their hand on a Zoom call. I brought them up. She was asking a question. I gave her an answer. And I heard the Lord say, ask her if you can pray for her. And it was just like God was sitting right next to me. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? What you mean, God? That doesn't sound very comfortable. And so, but it was like, I wanted to throw up. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to pray for this woman. Now, I've prayed for many people at church. I've prayed for my children every night of their life. You know, my husband and I pray together. I'd never prayed in a business setting. And so I was like, okay, deep breath. Would it be okay if I prayed for you right now? And she was like, absolutely. Now I had put some things on social media. People knew that I was a Christian because I would put every once in a while, like a picture of our family getting ready to go to church or something, something about Christmas or Easter. So it was no surprise, but I had not brought it into my coaching. And that was the first day that I did. And she was like, absolutely. And she's crying and I'm crying. And then I was like, okay, we got that done. Well, it happened again a couple months later. And I was like, oh crap. Is this where we're headed, God? Because this is going to stretch me. And I remember, you know, that I had I was in a mastermind with Stu McLaren once. He was a coach of mine. And he was talking about himself in this way, but I applied it to me. And he said, love me or hate me, but there's no money in the middle. And I remember thinking to myself, that applies to me. Like if I go ahead, and the truth is like, it wasn't like I made this conscious decision. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start praying for my clients. I'm going to start, you know, giving them Bible scriptures in my coaching. It got to where I just couldn't leave it out because it's so much a part of my normal life. If I were to meet you at Target today and you're a complete stranger and you're crying and I'm like, honey, are you okay? And you tell me something awful just happened. I would ask you, what can I do? How can I help? Can I pray for you real quick? Like I would do that. You know what I mean? So why is it any different in my coaching group? This is just normally a naturally who I am. And so, you know, that saying, love me or hate me, there's no money in the middle. You will repel people when they know what you stand for, but it will also magnetize the right people to you. Because when people are like, I want a business coach, do you know anybody that's a Christian? I know that there are not a lot of us. And so I know I'm on the lips of a lot of women. And for that, I'm very grateful. I never want to see these women as numbers. I always want to see them as a real life person who has a real life business and a heart. And she wants to make impact in her family and in her community and in her checkbook. And I take that very seriously. So that was a long answer.
No, it was a great answer. Thank you so much. I really feel like
you're so welcome.
Everybody needs to hear this because, you know, it not only applies to your spirituality, like you said, it would almost be like a bait and switch.
It is. And so I want to know the people that I'm doing business with. I want to know like where they stand on certain issues or if we're in alignment. And I've worked with a lot of coaches who we did not believe the same things and that was okay. But I just think that it's important that sometimes people know going into it. So.
And I really think that it gives everybody who's listening permission to think next time they go on social media to think a little bit of how they can inject a little bit more of themselves and be a little bit more vulnerable in that way. So thank you for sharing that.
You're so welcome. Absolutely.
So what do you think is the biggest misconception that people have of you as a successful businesswoman?
You know what? When they meet me in real life, that I'm cold or kind of a bee, it's because I'm so shy. I really am. And because they think, okay, she has a huge podcast and she's got a book and, you know, she's in all of her coaching groups and she's live on stories every day. She must be an extrovert. No, I am a total and complete introvert. So people always assume that I'm an extrovert. And so then when they meet me in real life and I'm like, you know, weird standing over in a corner all by myself with my one safe person, they're like, wow, she's not very, you know, warm. It's not that. I always gravitate towards like one safe person as most introverts do. And so I think that's probably something people misconceive about me a lot because I'm very, very introverted. I need a lot of alone time, a lot of downtime.
It's good for people to know that. And now they know.
Yeah,
don't take it personally.
Yes.
Introverts, we love introverts. And finally, if everybody who's listening had to do what you're about to tell them to do, and they have to do it in the next 24 hours, what would that thing be?
Is it all business owners?
Yes.
Okay. Do one thing that's scaring you today. The one thing either that God's laid on your heart, or you kind of have an inkling, or you kind of have like the suspicion, I think I'm maybe supposed to be starting a book. I think I'm maybe supposed to be starting a podcast. I think I'm maybe supposed to be, you know, launching a course. Do one thing just that will take you in that direction. Just one. Because what we do as business owners is we're like, oh my gosh, starting a podcast. Like it's easy for Ina to do. She's got all her ducks in a row and you know, it's easy for Jennifer to launch whatever. But we all start in the same place, being nervous, not sure if it's going to work, not sure if anybody will buy anything, not sure. But God can't do anything with like non-action. And so we have to be willing to go, I'm not sure, but I'll take just one little baby step in that direction just to see, just to kind of test the waters. And it's through action that a lot of times clarity happens. And so many women are unclear of their next steps in business, but it's because they've gotten stuck. And so my one piece of advice would be do something today to help you get unstuck, because it's almost like when you get stuck in business, it's business quicksand. And you know, sometimes you just kind of sink deeper and deeper and deeper. And the way out is just little baby steps. So do something today that you're nervous to do, but you're suspecting you're supposed to, that feels scary. That would be my suggestion.
Love it. And everybody needs to do it. You have been amazing. I've so enjoyed this time
with
you, Jennifer.
Ditto. It was like walking down memory lane. Thank you. It was so fun.
Right. Can you please tell everybody where they can follow you? Where do you want them to hang out with you?
Yeah. So, well, since we're on a podcast, you've got podcast listeners here. So my podcast is called The Jennifer Allwood Show. Very easy to remember. And we just recently, it was in the fall. We hit 5 million downloads. So I would love for you to come over and take a listen to the podcast. On social media, find me on Instagram. I have way more followers on Facebook, but Instagram people are nicer. And I always answer my DMs on Instagram. So find me there. I'd love to connect with you.
And of course, we are going to add all of those links in the show notes. Thank you so much, Jennifer. This has been amazing.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Hey there, Ina here. After listening to this interview, you may be wondering what you missed. What did our guest share with me that was so hot? I couldn't even put it in the mainstream version of this podcast. Become a TGP Insider today and get access to all of our uncut interviews, as well as access to the behind the scenes of my six-figure coaching business through my Instagram close friend stories. Head over to theglobalphenomenon.com/insider or click on the link in the show notes for all the details. And I'll see you inside our Facebook community for online coaches, where you can share what's going on in your business and connect with other amazing coaches in this space. Go to theglobalphenomenon.com/Facebook or click on the link in the show notes. And I'll see you on the next one.